Song Travels explores the journey singers and songs take together. This project is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks. Additional support comes from NPR and NPR member stations.
Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today is vocalist, guitarist, songwriter, and producer, Nick Waterhouse. LA Weekly called him the young man who makes old R&B. His first single, Some Place, was recorded in an all-analog studio and released on vinyl. Paste Magazine says, Waterhouse is a rocker at heart, one whose music just happens to reflect his appreciation for vintage R&B without fully falling back on it. His EP, Is That Clear, was well-received, and after touring Europe, he released a full-length album, Time's All Gone. His sophomore album, Holly, continues in a vein of live analog sound with a style that is at once vintage, yet undeniably original. Nick Waterhouse, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here, too. I really enjoy your music, and I enjoy your aesthetic in that you have a certain appreciation for sound and for music and a certain style that I think is largely lost today. I think a lot of people are sometimes fakers or pretenders that they really like a certain kind of vintage sound, but you really have gotten very much into that and taken it and brought it into the 21st century.
Well, that's very flattering. That'll put a big grin on my face, you know. It's not really a fashion or a choice for me. I'm just being really honest to what has shaped me, you know. Like any artist or any creator, you can look as much at somebody's influence as you like, but I definitely feel this way. I don't feel like there's another way I could be doing things.
Well, I'd like to ask you to get right into the music at this point. And you've chosen to begin with a song called Hands on the Clock. You've written all the songs that we're going to hear today.
Mm-hmm.
Have you written with any collaborators or are all these solo?
These are all solo. These are original. Hands on the Clock has gone through a few iterations in my life, actually. And this version, I was fortunate enough to have help with the arrangements. I came with the chords and the concept and the lyrics and worked with a really close friend of mine who is sort of an interesting figure. He's not known, and we were teenagers together and played music, and now he's a mathematician in Baton Rouge. And
well, they say math and music are very closely connected, right?
He's got the mind for it, and so his name's Anthony Polizzi. He helped add a fancy chord here or there when we were doing the full arrangements on the record. So can thank him for a few little suspensions in this next one on the piano.
So now let's listen to it. It's a cut from your latest recording, Hands on the Clock.
Well, I had an idea, a grand design. Well, I heard it right between your lines. Do it in a far, far away mind.
That's Hands on the Clock, performed and written by our guest Nick Waterhouse with J.B. Flatt at the piano. How is it singing these songs in a cut-down version, essentially, from having toured, I imagine, doing them with the full complement of what is heard on the recording?
Well, it feels I feel a lot more vulnerable.
Yeah.
These are kind of how my demos all feel, which I don't share with anyone at all. So it's an interesting position to find myself in.
Do you have to let go and say, oh, what the hell, this is it?
Yeah, the songs are also living now. So I feel like part of the trick, I'm a firm believer in when I'm working on something, not telling anybody about it until it's finished. And so I think sometimes I learned the hard way that people hearing rough mixes or demonstrations maybe lose the bigger picture of what I've got going on in my mind, and that can fall short. And so now that the record's out, these can live on their own, you know.
There was a recording you made that really kickstarted your career. It was the beginning, really, and it's a song you did called "Someplace." And when I listen to that recording, that first note that you come out with, it's like a howl. It's amazing. How many takes did you do to get that sound?
One. That was it. I remember finishing that and asking my best friend who was there, "Was that okay? You know, should I redo it?" And he's shaking his head no from the control room. And that was the first time I had opened my mouth in front of a microphone in a studio in years. I just did what I felt when I did it and kind of took a leap of faith with that one. I definitely was under the spell of a lot of the 45s that I was DJing at the time, and that helped me feel like I could pull it off if I could just make something, you know.
And you issued this recording on 45, which is not the most likely way to start a musical career, at least not one that one hopes will be successful. What was your motivation in issuing this recording on 45? Did you have any designs or plans for how it would be disseminated, or what were you thinking?
I just figured I would make something that I myself would be excited about and maybe a handful of my friends would. And I thought if I could just sell 50 of these, I would be happy.
How many did you press?
The first was 500, and then I did 500 more. And so overall, there's 1,000 copies out there. I thought it would just be cooler to make this record and stick it in the bins, you know? And something happened where I think a Spanish record collector came to San Francisco and bought a copy and then came back the next day and bought 20 copies and then brought them all back and disseminated them among his, you know, Northern Soul and Obscure Rhythm and Blues collector friends. And then they all started DJing it. And at the same time, some of my friends and acquaintances around the Bay Area had started spinning it in their nights too, because they all felt like it sat well alongside a lot of the vintage R&B that they were all playing. And, you know, I just felt like I was existing somewhere between things when I made that record. And I wasn't trying to be anything. And that was the trick.
And you later included it on your first full length CD,
Yes.
Time's All Gone.
Yeah.
Would you perform it for us now?
I would love to, sure.
Well, there's some place I'd rather be. It's something that's been on my mind almost constantly. Oh, it's some place don't expect you to understand. Well, people talk to me and no, they can't comprehend. Well, I don't expect you to understand, and it's not much trying to speak well. Can't help trying to say it again. Am I sounding too oblique?
Someplace. You have lived most of your life on the West Coast, and there's definitely, for me, a West Coast vibe to what you do, and I don't even know exactly what that means.
I'm glad you can hear that. I think that that's something really important that kind of defines a lot of what I do. The funniest thing about my life in California is that I was neither fish nor fowl, like where I grew up. And when I would go places, like I spent some time in Philadelphia for a while, I lived in England for a little bit, everybody always thought I was from somewhere else no matter where I was. And I remember being in San Francisco and everybody thought I was from the East Coast because of like how I dress and carry myself. And yet I feel like there is this element of, it's like a little bit of Pacific Coast like breeze in whatever I do, you know? But musically, the California thing is growing up with a real deep connection to the diaspora of California. I mean, it has its own sort of like cultural migratory patterns.
Also, the noir aspect of LA, I think, is evident.
Certainly. That's equally influential on me, where, I mean, just the way that Hollywood polled people, whether it polled musicians like Howard Roberts and Barney Kessel to come do a lot of work for soundtracks, or whether it polled writers like Raymond Chandler and right. Brecht even, or Faulkner out their way. And mm-hmm. and all these were based around this sort of like industrial, cultural, like post-war boom. And that to me is a lot of what helps define the characterization. And that's the noir thing.
Speaking of the noir influence, I find that there is a lineage between a song like Laura and a song you're going to do for us now called Reina, in a certain way.
Sure. And that's about a almost unattainable and dark female figure, I guess. So Reina is a lot of my experience and a lot of California all rolled up into one.
Well, I think that's a perfect cue to ask you to perform it.
Sure.
Oh, you left your wild days behind, but some nights I see it in your eyes. And the people that you called your friends, did you feel it was me or them? You asked me if you just wait, will you talk like that, we get further away. Well, I don't know what else is to say, but I got such love for you. Oh, I don't want to do, they expect us to, yeah, I got such love for you.
Nick Waterhouse performing Reina with J.B. Flatt at the piano. So there's Reina, and then there's Holly. These are both fictitious females.
Reina's a real person.
Uh-huh.
But I think that song is, it goes beyond Reina, the real person, and into how complicated and messy, like, real relationships are for people. But Holly is, how did Flaubert put it? Holly, c'est moi. Holly is me, I guess.
Well, okay. I've got to think about that. There's one more song that you're going to perform, and it's another one that is very intriguing, and it's called Sleeping Pills.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is a song that is the closest thing to my ideal form of expression in my career. And when I wrote it, I was really shaken because it felt like everything was coalescing. And I think that this is a song that is so personal, but at the same time is so universal and so not about myself. It's just about this darkness that I think I understand. And that's all I have to say about it.
Here it is, Sleeping Pills, performed by Nick Waterhouse.
Well, dreamt last night that I saw you again. Staring at me, asking, were we friends? You sat down in my seat and drank it from my cup. Oh, yeah, you stood in the door, wouldn't let me up. I counted 16 bells that you set on the desk, and you were grinning at me at the bones in my fist.
Thank you very much, Nick, for Sleeping Pills and for your new recording, Holly, and for sharing your dreams, for sharing your unique expression, which I think is important for our time now. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on this program, and I wish you well.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
To hear the full Song Travels broadcast, tune in to your NPR station. Visit npr.org to find a station in your area. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks. Song Travels is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. Learn more about the artists and music on the series by visiting our website, scetv.org/songtravels.